All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Guiding Lights. I'm here in our new house in La Vida for the first time. So in my own little corner, you know, and I want to say thank you to Shauna and Jacqueline and then also Jay and Ron for helping me to move. It was great. Thank you. So we're all settled. Jasmine's in there doing some unpacking right now. And we actually went home for the weekend, went home to Pueblo West. So we just arrived back here about 30 minutes ago. But we'll be here all week because we have a retreat this week, right? So we're here for Bernadette Roberts. And I'm looking at What is the Self? And last week, one of the things we looked at was our sense of existence as will, right? You remember that? Our sense of existence as will. And she talked about how when we move towards something, you know, like we desire something, or when we move away from something, like we're trying to avoid something, she called both of those desire. She said when we're moving towards something or away from something, trying to avoid it, that's desire. It's often called grasping and avoidance. You know, and then she said, when we aren't moving towards something or away from something, when the will is still, that is just the sense of being. When the will is still. So that's just a little review of what we were looking at last week. And so I'm going to open up to page 12. And I think we stopped, according to where my little dot is, we stopped in the middle of a paragraph last week. So what I will do is start at the beginning of that paragraph. It is the first full paragraph on the page. It starts with the human passage might be compared to a moving sidewalk. So that's where I'll begin. But the first few sentences here we did look at last week. The human passage might be compared to a moving sidewalk that is carrying man to his ultimate destiny. The choice is either to tune in and go with this movement or to spend our lives going against it, which we call resistance. Either way, we cannot get off or stop the movement, because the passage takes its own course and will be completed whether we wish to go with it or not. Thus, the quality of life is our choice, but not life itself. So this is kind of, again, this is a review of what we were talking about at the end of last week, but this is kind of that free will or destiny conversation that people often have. And really what she's saying here is it's kind of free will and destiny. You know, like there's a destiny to your life that you have no choice over, but your free will is how you choose to either accept it or resist it. You know, go with the flow or fight the flow and try and create your own flow. And, you know, of course, I'm brand new in this house, so everything is packed up, so I can't grab Inner Ramana real quick. Well, you know what? I could probably grab it on my phone real quick. We'll see if we even get past what we already did. So let me go to Inner Ramana. Let's see. I have to think. I have to turn on my brain. There we go. It's in the Kindle. Let's see. It's near the end. Here it is. It's on page 97 of Inner Ramana. It's called The Only Choice Is Where. The truth is that all thought rises out of the sense of I, or because of the sense of I, as a correction to this thought. And this isn't what Bernadette's talking about right now, but what this is saying is even if I have what we call a right-minded thought, for example, I feel annoyance arising and then a right-minded thought comes in to practice rest, accept, and trust, that even right-minded thought arises because of the sense of I. Like, I wouldn't need that correction if the sense of I hadn't been present first. Does that make sense? But this isn't what she's talking about, but I thought I would just address it since it's how this message starts off. The state of true being precedes thought. Therefore, it is before thought, beyond thought, and after thought. It is no thought, and it scares you, seems to be death or nothingness to you, because you are identified with thought. This is why people struggle against this idea so much, against the idea that they are that which precedes thought. And I'm not so sure people in Awakening Together consciously struggle against that, but there may be some unconscious struggling still occurring. People believe the idea, I think, therefore I am, which would mean that not to think would be to cease to exist. But this is not true. Thought springs forth from existence. And here she would call this will, right? This type of existence. Thought springs forth from existence. Existence is the birthplace of thought. Existence is not dependent on thought. And it never has been. The idea, so here we get into the free will and destiny part, which brought me to this message. The idea, I decide, is an error. You choose to engage in the belief in thought, or you choose to observe thought without being engaged, or you choose to abide in the self completely and leave thought behind. But you do not decide what the thought will be. See, so that says even the thoughts that come into our mind are a part of the script or a part of the destiny. We don't have a choice about those thoughts specifically. What we have a choice about is how we will engage or not engage with those thoughts. The idea I decide is an error. You choose to engage in the belief in thought, or you choose to observe thought without being engaged, or you choose to abide in the self completely and leave thought behind. But you do not decide what the thought will be. Your choice is where, but not what. And by where it really means is, where am I going to abide? Where is my attention? Your choice is where, but not what. What is already in motion? And that's what she's referring to, this moving sidewalk, right? What is already in motion? But where you shall be while what does its thing is completely up to you. Because the states of awareness are always available, always there for your choosing, no matter what is in the current moment. So again, our choice is how we engage with thought or engage with what's happening. Usually thought is trying to tell us how to engage with what's happening, though, so that's still engaging with thought. Our choice is whether we're going to be fully involved in thought, whether we're going to be observing thought, or even whether we abide completely in the self and leave thought behind. Inner Ramana continues, this is why knowing your heart is your only business. You do not decide what, so there is nothing about what that must be decided. You only choose where to be as what occurs. And where you want to be is not a question. You know where you want to be. Choose to be there, and you have complete alignment of will. Be aware that the only choice is where, and make that choice in the moment according to the decision of the heart. So let me read what Bernadette said again. She says, the human passage might be compared to a moving sidewalk that is carrying man to his ultimate destiny. The choice is either to tune in and go with this movement, or to spend our lives going against it. Either way, we cannot get off or stop the movement, right? We have no control over the what. Because the passage takes its own course and will be completed whether we wish to go with it or not. Thus, the quality of life is our choice, but not the life itself. And of course, the quality of life would be choosing, you know, the right mind, or choosing to be the observer, or choosing to abide as the self, rather than being engaged with the thought, which is constantly resisting everything, wanting everything to be different than it is. Now, this is where we're getting into sentences that we haven't read yet. The will, as it exists primarily for itself, is the ego. So that's her definition of ego. The will, or desire, or existence, or the sense of self, when it exists primarily for itself, that is the ego. The ego suffers and becomes anxious or has a tantrum when it does not get what it wants, whereas the true self, as the simple, quiet experience of being, is a joy. So you can tell that this ego that is suffering or becoming anxious or having a tantrum when it doesn't get what it wants, that's the desire. That's going towards something or avoiding something, right? That's the ego. But when she refers to that same sense of existence or that same sense of self, when resting in the heart without desire, just being as the true self. Now, one thing that's important about this is, again, Sean is asking, is destiny the code? Yes, the code is another thing that expresses that, yes. One thing that's interesting about Bernadette, and in order not to get confused, it's important that we keep that in mind, is that she defines true self differently than the way we tend to here in Awakening Together. We tend to equate true self and the absolute, right? She equates true self and the I Am Presence. That's what she calls the true self. Because she says beyond the I Am Presence, there is no self. You see, no self she equates to the absolute. So her language is a little different. So she says that when we are abiding in the heart with no desire and no avoidance and just being, we are abiding as the true self or the I Am Presence or consciousness. And of course, many of you all experience this, especially maybe during meditation. You get to that point where you're just being. Your attention is no longer flying to thought. You're no longer thinking about what you want, don't want, how you want to control, right? And what's happening is you're abiding then as the I Am Presence. And this is really what Nisargadatta asks us to do in meditation, is to reach that state and then just stay there, just abide there. And some people might think, you know, that this true self or this I Am Presence is something that they haven't reached yet. Like it's something mystical, something mysterious. I couldn't think of that word. I was thinking mysterical, mysterious. When actually it's just being truly, genuinely still. And being that I Am Presence. So again, the ego suffers and becomes anxious or has a tantrum when it does not get what it wants, whereas the true self, as the simple, quiet experience of being, is a joy. Thus, being is the will prior to its movement in any direction. A will that finds no lasting peace until it rests in its divine center. The point to keep in mind is that the will or the feeling self, and for her, these two terms are synonymous. Remember, there was the knowing self, which was the mind bent upon itself. And then there's the feeling self, which is the feeling of existence, the sense of existence, the feeling sense of existence. Thus, being is the will prior to its movement in any direction, a will that finds no lasting peace until it rests in its divine center. The point to keep in mind is that the will or feeling self is not a thinking or intellectual faculty, but instead is the experience of feeling being or feeling life. And then she says, man has no greater certitude than this, that he exists. So again, before I start the next section, I just want to review really quickly that she says that consciousness or the sense of self is made up of two primary parts, but these two parts go together. You can't have one without the other. One part is the knowing self, which is the mind bending upon itself so that the mind is aware of the mind. And then the other part is this feeling self, which is this, when it's still, it's just this sense of existence or being. But when it's not still, it is desire and avoidance. And take those two pieces together, add them together, and that's what she calls consciousness. So I'm going to move into the next section, which starts at the bottom of page 12, which is called Unity of Consciousness. Now, this is different than unity consciousness. Unity of consciousness, she's talking about how these two parts of consciousness are really one. You know, even though she described them separately, she talked about the knowing self, and then she talked about the feeling self, they're really still one self. So unity of consciousness. To explain the unity of consciousness, we might compare its structure to an inverted triangle. So again, I'm right here where I haven't unpacked anything yet, so I don't even have paper and pencil. But let's just imagine an inverted triangle. This is a regular triangle. Turn that upside down, which I don't know if I can do like this, right? An inverted triangle, right? The point is at the bottom and the broad part is at the top. To explain the unity of consciousness, we might compare its structure to an inverted triangle. The subject-object poles, or the reflexive mechanism of the mind, form the base of the triangle. When the triangle is inverted, that base is pretty good, right? So the base of the triangle, the flat part of the triangle, is up here with the head, where the mind is bent on itself and it knows itself. The subject-object poles, or the reflexive mechanism of the mind, form the base of the triangle, which leads downward to converge at a one-pointed center. Without the base, there can be no center, and without the center, there can be no base. So you wouldn't have a triangle unless you had the knowing self up here and the feeling self down here, right? So she's using a triangle to describe it. You have the subject-object poles of consciousness, where consciousness can be aware of consciousness, mind can be aware of mind, self can be aware of self, and then it converge on this sense of I exist and the sense of desire. And when you put all of that together, you have the unity of consciousness, which again is not unity consciousness. It's one sense of me. One sense of self. And if you really pay attention to yourself, whether you're in your right mind or your wrong mind is irrelevant, you will notice this is true. You'll notice that your sense of self is made up of yourself being aware of your thoughts or yourself being aware of your own awareness. And it's also made up of being aware of what you want and don't want, or just being aware of your sense of being, right? It's a totality, and that's consciousness. She says, what poists a center is the reflexive mechanism of the mind looking into itself, an unconscious look, which carries awareness down or within to a point where subject and object converge and come together in the simple experience of life and being. So all that she's saying is the same thing I just said, except she said this is unconscious. You know, you don't consciously sit there and say to yourself, okay, I'm going to feel like a self by being aware of my thoughts and then also noticing my sense of existence, right? This isn't a conscious decision. This is just an unconscious mechanism that gives us a sense of self. She does say that, again, initially this is completely unconscious, but she says with maturity, it does become a conscious center as well. And you might remember that earlier when we were looking at Bernadette Roberts, she talked about how everything that's unconscious must eventually become conscious. And so this unconscious combining of the reflexive mechanism of mind along with the sense of existence or along with desire and avoidance, and then creates this feeling of me, eventually becomes conscious. And when this becomes conscious, what's really important about this, at least in my humble opinion, is anything I have ever transcended, any belief I have ever transcended, any habit I have ever transcended, I transcended it by it becoming conscious first, and then me paying attention to it with, I'm going to call it healing eyes, healing awareness, right? Watching it. So if the sense of self is unconscious combination of our reflexive mechanism of mind and our sense of existence or our sense of will, then when it becomes conscious and we can start paying attention to it with healing awareness, that's going to be the beginning of the end of that. And if you think about Nisargadatta's teaching about focusing on the I am presence, you can see, because this whole thing is the I am presence, right? Then what's going to happen is you're going to be watching, where does this sense of I am come from? Where does this sense of I am? And eventually this stuff becomes unconscious and you stay with that. You would look at that I am presence. You notice the mechanism of that I am presence. And at some point, reason dawns and you realize it is a mechanism that you are looking at. Therefore, it's not you. You see? So initially it's an unconscious center, but with maturity it becomes conscious as well. She says, beyond even the deepest unconscious self lies the divine. And when she says beyond even the deepest unconscious self, she has a capital S here. So again, she's talking about that true self, which she has defined as the sense of just being without any moving toward or moving away from anything, right? So beyond even the deepest sense of being, or beyond even the deepest sense of existence, lies the divine. And the divine here would be the equivalent to Nisargadatta's word for the absolute, or my word for the first principle of God. Beyond even the deepest unconscious self lies the divine. That which experiences the divine is the unconscious self. But when this self, the experiencer and its experience, falls away, the divine turns out to be non-experiential by comparison. So this is really an interesting thing to contemplate if you're interested in truth. Many of us have had experiences that we would define as experiences of truth or experiences of God or experiences of the divine or experiences of the light, however we define it, but it was an experience for us and it seemed quite holy, quite profound, like it was teaching us about a reality beyond this that we appear to live in on a daily basis. But what she's pointing out to us is that which experienced that profound experience is still the sense of self. The sense of self is the experiencer, which means that to some degree, our experience of the divine is colored by the sense of self, and it is not a pure experience of the divine. And in fact, she says by comparison, and that's an important word. In fact, let me make sure that's the word she used and that I'm not adding to her. Yeah, she says by comparison. So by comparison, the actual experience of the divine is non-experiential. Now, the reason I say by comparison is very important is because, first of all, I think that the mind cannot fathom what she's talking about. But I think the mind tries. And I think if the mind just hears the word non-experiential, the mind might think, well, death. Or, you know, unconscious, like in deep sleep unconscious. You know, nothing. Like, you know, what would I want that for, right? So it's really important to note that she says by comparison. By comparison to our experiences of the divine from the sense of self. And we can, many of us can really talk about these incredible experiences that we've had. She says, by comparison, it's non-experiential. And again, I'm not going to claim that I know what she's talking about exactly. I have 1 minute here, so that's good. I'll stop with this. But what comes to my mind, and I'm going to trust what comes to my mind, is that when I am anxious about something, worried about something, my mind is very active and I'm, you know, trying to do all kinds of things to manipulate. You know, there's a lot of experience going on. When I'm just sitting in a chair being, by comparison, that's pretty non-experiential. And that's why sometimes people describe just sitting in a chair doing nothing as boring. Yet it's only non-experiential by comparison. It's its own type. It's its own more subtle experience, right? And so the absolute then, the direct experience of the absolute compared to the self's experiences of the absolute is non-experiential by comparison. But that doesn't mean it isn't its own type of experience. Just like being is its own type of experience compared to being worried and trying to manipulate, or even compared to watching TV, you know, being involved in a sports game or something, right? So that's where I'm going to stop for today. And I will be leaving the sanctuary because I have a board meeting tonight. But you guys have a wonderful evening in the sanctuary. And Don, I'll be sure to make this post before I go start getting prepared for the board meeting. Okay? I'll see you guys.